your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. We're going to be covering some very important events this week and happenings, you could say. And one of the most important events is James O'Keefe came up with Veritas, came up with a hidden camera, you could say, expose of some of the inner workings of Google. And this has probably been one of the biggest stories ever, I mean, in our history almost, because it reveals how Google has been manipulating the search engines to manipulate some of the elections. But anyway, we're going to start out with an older clip here of Robert Epstein being interviewed on PBS, and then we're going to bring it up to date. So here we go with Robert Epstein, what he said about 6 years ago. Here we go now.
We're talking to you today because you're doing some research and you've done some studies which have huge repercussions for democracy as we know it and those things that we call search engines that we use all the time. So very briefly, what's your research about?
Well, I've made a discovery. My colleague and I, Ronald Robertson, have made a genuine discovery. We don't have too many of those in the behavioral sciences, as you may know. But we've just discovered that that search engine rankings can be manipulated in ways that dramatically change voter preferences. I mean dramatically so, meaning that we can push the way people will vote for one candidate or another by 15% or more, which is enough so that if you had power over search engines and over search rankings, that means that you could possibly determine the outcomes of upwards of 50% of the elections in democratic countries around the world.
So, yeah, that's huge. So just so we're clear, what we're not talking about is search engine optimization, hiring someone to make your rankings higher or lower.
No.
That's right, because basically both candidates can do that. You're talking about something more structural.
Oh, yes. Yes, see, normally in an election, that's right, there's competition, and both candidates have access to every possible means of influencing voters. But what we've looked at is something very different. We're looking at the possibility that the search engine company might favor one candidate or another. And the question is, well, what could they do? How much could they help a candidate by altering search rankings?
Right.
But we've discovered really two things. One is that you can have an enormous effect on the voters who are undecided. Again, pushing the vote one way or another by 15% or more. And then there's a second discovery. We discovered that you can mask this phenomenon so that literally no one is aware that they are being manipulated.
Okay, so give me an example. In your study, you actually showed a statistically representative population, a bunch of information about a prime ministerial race in Australia. So all the data that you were showing was real data that exists on the web, good stories and bad stories about the candidates. So what did you do and what did you find?
Yes, we're using material from a real election in Australia because we don't want people's biases about candidates or parties to kind of get in the way of studying this effect.
Okay.
So that's why we're using this election. It's the 2010 election between Tony Abbott and Julia Gillard. They're running for Prime Minister of Australia. And all the material is real. It comes off of the internet. And what we do in the study is we ask people to rate the candidates just based on some very brief information that we give them. Then we give them an opportunity to do some search engine research, and we've created a kind of mock search engine in which they have search results, and of course they can click on the search results and look at real web pages and so on. Now, the subjects are assigned to one of three groups, and they're randomly assigned to a group in which the rankings favor Tony Abbott, to a group in which the rankings favor Julia Gillard, and it's literally just the opposite ordering of the search rankings, just the opposite ordering. And then a third group in which the rankings don't favor either candidate. And the result of this is really astonishing. The people who have access to search rankings that favor Tony Abbott, they shift their opinion in the direction of Tony Abbott by, I think, in the first experiment we ran, I think by 15 or 16%. The people who see rankings that favor Julia Gillard, they shift in the other direction by the same amount, or even more, actually, I think by 17. Yeah.
So this group of people are supposed to be, for example, an undecided group of voters in Cuyahoga County, somewhere in the United States. And when they are Googling up information about a presidential candidate or a local politician, that's what your study is trying to model, right?
Exactly. In fact, if you think about it, we're really looking at the swing voters. And in any close election, especially this last one, it's the swing voters who actually determine who wins.
Why would a search engine do it? What's in it for them?
Companies have always looked at the political field, the playing field, and said, oh, who's going to help us more? Because a company obviously wants to be successful. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So, but what I'm saying here is that this introduces, though, another entirely new realm of influence, and one which has no parallel, in my opinion, no parallel whatsoever. Because what's happening here is that a company could literally influence the outcome of elections, A, with no one knowing, and B, with no possible balance, no corrective. In other words, no one there, counteracting what they're doing.
This is an odd request. Well, is there anything we can do about it? Or, I mean, how would we even be able to hold search engine companies accountable to try to say, well, you need to give us backdoor keys so that we know your algorithm and that you're not manipulating the outcome of an election?
Well, I think what you've just said is way too timid, because, you know, there is precedent for this kind of problem existing. The phone companies in the United States, for example, there was really just one for a very long time, but the phone companies here, their power to listen in on conversations was being abused for decades. In the 1930s, all of the phones of the United States Supreme Court justices were being tapped.
Wow.
So this was going on for decades in the early days of phone use. And eventually the government had to step in, obviously, and regulate the phone companies. And they've been extremely highly regulated ever since. And there's another precedent, which is the credit bureaus. That's also an area where, you know, companies were collecting an enormous amount of data about people's financial transactions. And there was room there for abuse. And so the government had to step in, and the credit bureaus are highly, highly regulated, which is important, because that way it means we can check our credit history, we can make corrections and so on. So what I'm saying is, given this power, that this power exists, whether search engine companies are using the power or not, that's completely irrelevant. The fact that this power exists means that, in my opinion, that search engine companies must be regulated by government agencies and must be tightly regulated, because if not, we have a very serious problem. No company in history has ever had this much power to alter literally the face of governments around the world.
All right, Robert Epstein.
Now, he has come up along with his colleagues the term SEME, Robert Epstein and colleagues, and it stands for Search Engine Manipulation Effect. And so he goes on in this further interview, or actually lecture, which is about a little over 11 to 12 minutes long, before the American Freedom Alliance, and describes it in a little more detail and tells something about the three different companies that are involved in swaying elections. But here we go with the American Freedom Alliance speech of a couple of years ago. This is Robert Epstein speaking again.
I'm here to tell you that as bad as you think things are, they're actually far worse. I am, as Karen said, a researcher, and I'm very good at what I do. A report that I published just 2 years ago in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which is on Google's power to shift opinions without people knowing, has been downloaded from PNAS's website more than 87,000 times. It's ranked in the top 1% of all scientific articles that the National Academy of Sciences monitors in all the sciences. It also was featured in Milo's new book. Various stories about my research have typically been broken by the Washington Post, but they've also gotten write-ups in the Conservative Review and just a couple of days ago in the American Spectator and other conservative publications, including Breitbart. Just 3 weeks ago, my small home in the San Diego area was invaded by a film crew of 12 people from L.A., New York, and Europe, led by a man whose work you might be familiar with, Peter Schweitzer, who published Clinton Cash last year. You're all being misled. You're being duped. You don't even realize it. You are all victims of what social scientists call negativity bias. Your attention is being drawn to a protest or a news story or an advertisement, an outrageous headline. I call this phenomenon the cockroach in the salad phenomenon. A cockroach in your salad ruins the whole salad. It draws all your attention. This is what's happening to most or all of you here, and you're not actually seeing what some people don't want you to see. We study what big powers in this country don't want anyone to see. That paper I mentioned, PNAS, that showed that if a candidate or a cause is favored in Google search rankings, for example, that can easily shift 20% of undecided voters toward that candidate with no one knowing that this has occurred. This effect varies demographically. In some demographic groups, the shift can be as high as 80%. We calculated a couple of years ago that because of Google's dominance around the world in online search, that Google's search algorithm has been determining the outcomes of national elections around the world probably upwards of close to 25% of the time. That's 25% of the world's national elections with no one knowing that any manipulation is occurring.
to answer your question, one of the problems that you have that you're not facing, you are not facing this, is that the most powerful influence machine in the world is very much in one political camp. The second most powerful, Facebook, is in the same political camp, and the third most powerful, Twitter, is in the same political camp. This is how opinions are being shaped now, and it has nothing to do with what's in the headlines. It has to do with two things: filtering and ordering. Hey, I thought I had 15 minutes, Karen. Okay. Filtering and ordering. In our newest research, which we won't actually be going public with until early next year, we have been looking at search suggestions. You know those little suggestions you get when you start to type a search term? Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? We've learned that if you start with a group of people who are undecided on a candidate or a cause, so they're split 50-50, in other words, if they had to vote right now, they'd be flipping a coin. And you manipulate search suggestions the way Google has the power to manipulate search suggestions, you can shift a 50-50 split among people who are undecided to a 90-10 split with no one knowing this is occurring. You may have heard last summer, you may have heard that Google was suppressing negative search suggestions for Hillary Clinton. My research team confirmed this. And that's when we started doing this line of research, because I kept wondering, well, why? Why would they do that? Well, it turns out if you have four positive search suggestions up there, you can get a dramatic shift in the direction of one candidate or cause, easily 35 to 40% shift. If you allow just one negative in the list, this is the cockroach in the salad, the shift drops from 35 to 40% down to zero. One negative. And if you go with four negatives, it goes in the other direction, 40% or higher. No one is aware of these things. We are all using these tools blindly. Our attention is drawn to trivia compared to, you know, these effects that some of the folks here have spoken about today. They have very little impact on elections, believe it or not, because we all have our own minds, and we all pay attention to what we believe in, and we ignore things we don't, and that's called confirmation bias. Some of the things that were discussed here today actually impact hundreds of thousands of votes, perhaps, at the most. The phenomena that we're studying are impacting the opinions, beliefs, attitudes, voting preferences of billions of people every single day, and there are no relevant laws or regulations in place to stop this. Now, you may have heard that last June, the European Union levied a $2.7 billion fine against Google. What was it for? Bias in their search results. That's what the fine was for. So you can, if you look really hard, you can see that these kinds of manipulations are being done. But in the United States at the moment, we're pretty much ignoring this. I've had calls from Representative Jim Jordan, who some of you may know of. I've had calls from Jim Hood, the Attorney General of Mississippi, and others. I mean, there are officials who are kind of beginning to notice that something is odd here. But we need to focus, people, not just on the cockroach in the salad. We need to focus on big, new means of manipulation that have never existed before in human history, and they're in the hands of a tiny number of people in a tiny little area in North California, Silicon Valley, who are accountable to nobody except their stockholders, who want them to make as much money for them as they can. That's their main agenda. The only way to get a handle on this is to set up a worldwide monitoring system. My team and I set up a system like this last year to monitor what Google and Bing and Yahoo were showing people in search results during the months before the election. We found consistent pro-Hillary Clinton search bias for almost the entire period that we were monitoring. In all 10 search positions on the first page of search results. That's enough to shift, as I put in writing last year, long before the election, at least 2.6 million votes with no one knowing that this manipulation has occurred. Did you notice that she won the popular vote by over 2.8 million votes? Without Google's help, this would have been a very, very close election. If Peter Thiel is in the audience today, we need $10 million to scale up this system so that we can be monitoring what these tech companies are showing us and our kids, I have five, 24/7. This system must be created to protect us. And I'm just going to leave you with one little thought. What if on election day, Mark Zuckerberg had pressed the enter key on his laptop and had caused go out and vote reminders to be sent to just supporters of Hillary Clinton? Do you know that that would have given her that day an additional 700,000 votes? This is according to Facebook's own research. Now, did he press the button or not? We don't know because we have no monitoring system in place. We must have such a system in place. If any of you are in a position to help us build this new system, please let me know. Thank you.
Next coming up is the expose. It's a short clip of James O'Keefe interviewing this whistleblower, an insider from Google, that explains how they set up these algorithms and how they're biasing those. And it's a selection in the different orders that the information is provided to the searcher, the researcher. So anyway, this is James O'Keefe on this expose, and there's some interviews going on behind. I'm going to have a clip up that will give you the video. You have to see the video and the subtitles and so forth on it to really understand some of this. But anyway, this is a clip of James O'Keefe, and he's really a fine person in doing this for the country. He's working for everyone. But here we go with James O'Keefe exposing a Google insider, and she explains how, from the Google viewpoint, they're structuring this, and then there's a whistleblower that's sitting next to James O'Keefe. Here we go now.
The reason why I decided to come to Project Veritas is because people need to know what's actually going on with Google. There's this facade about what they're doing, but what they're actually doing, what the employees are actually seeing inside the company, is different.
But the reason we launched our AI principles is because people were not putting that line in the sand. They were not saying what is fair and acceptable. So we're like, well, we are a big company. We're going to say it.
People voted for the current president do not agree with our definition of fairness.
They're not an objective piece. They're not an objective source of information.
But then there are things, it's about ML fairness.
ML fairness, the teams.
Fairness, like, yeah. You know, you need to be fair.
You're also training our algorithms, like, if 2016 happened again, would the end be different?
They are a highly biased political machine that is bent on never letting somebody like Donald Trump come to power again.
2020 is certainly on top of now my old organization, Social Safety, top of mind. They've been working on it since 2016 to make sure we're ready for 2020.
This is a Goliath, I'm but a David. trying to say that the emperor has no clothes.
He does hold in front of Congress multiple times. Making pressure, not changing.
Being a small little ant, I can be crushed, and I'm aware of that. But this is something that is bigger than me. This is something that needs to be said to the American public.
Elizabeth Warren is saying that we should break the blue rule. I'm like, I love her, but she's very misguided. Like, that will not make it better. It'll make it worse. Now, all these smaller companies who don't have the same resources that we do will be charged with preventing the next Trump situation. It's like a small company cannot. And it's like...
This year, a Facebook insider exposed deboosting of conservatives on Facebook. That insider inspired someone at Pinterest to come to Project Veritas with his story. Last week, we released a report from the Pinterest insider Eric Cochran, detailing censorship of pro-life and Christian content.
The tech companies can't fight us all.
Today, we bring you a Google insider. A brave man who came forward and brought us a story that will scare you.
I think sunlight is the best disinfectant, and people need to start asking questions.
A couple weeks before the Google insider came forward, Project Veritas secretly recorded with Jen Janai, a Google executive. Janai talks about making sure when people search for things through machine learning algorithms, Google's political agenda is always present.
We all got screwed over in 2016, and it wasn't just us, it was like people got screwed over, the news media got screwed over, like everybody got screwed over, so now we're rocking, they're like, what happened there? How do you prevent it from happening again?
Right after Donald Trump won the election in 2016, the company did a complete 180 in what they thought was important. Before, they thought self-expression and giving everyone a voice was important. But now they're like, hey, there's a lot of hate, and because of there's a lot of hate, misogyny, and racism, that's the reason why Donald Trump got elected. And so we need to fix that. We need to start policing our users because we don't like to have an outcome like that. We don't want to have an outcome like that to happen again.
Yeah, let's talk a little about that. Tell me more about what you observed at these meetings right after Trump was elected. Who said it? What was said exactly?
So the things that changed was that the TJF, they started talking about the need to combat hate and racism online, and also at YouTube they had the same like talks by the CEO Susan, and they talked about combating that and getting rid of unfairness, and so slowly they started introducing the concept of machine learning fairness.
Jen Janai is the head of responsible innovation at Google Global Affairs. She determines policy and ethics for machine learning, or artificial intelligence. What we've learned is that AI is increasingly what Google Search is all about.
The reason we launched our AI principles was because people were not putting that line in the sand. They were not saying what is fair and what is ethical. They were like, well, we are a big company, we're going to say it. So my definition of fairness and bias specifically talks about historically marginalized communities, and that's what I care about. Communities who are in power and have positions in power are not who I'm solving fairness for.
Our definition of fairness, one of those things that we thought would be like obvious and everybody would agree to, and it wasn't. Like, there are the same people who voted for the current president do not agree with our definition of fairness.
Fairness is a dog whistle. It does not mean what you think that it means, and you have to apply doublethink in order to understand what they're really saying. And what they're really saying about fairness is that they have to manipulate their search results so that it gives them their political agenda that they want. And so they have to rebias their algorithms so that they can get their agenda across. You know, to unpack everything that she's saying that she wants the algorithm to be fair to a hand-picked representative of that community, means that what she's trying to do is she's trying to sell you a product that is not objectionable. What she's trying to do is she's trying to sell a product that's not objective, that doesn't represent the will of its users, but instead represents the will of a group of people making decisions behind the shadows.
So what did you find inside Google that was related to this idea of fairness?
What I found at Google related to fairness was a machine learning algorithm called ML Fairness, ML standing for machine learning. And fairness meaning whatever it is that they want to define as fair. You could actually think of fairness as unfair because it's taking as input the clicks that people are making and then figuring out which signals are being generated from those clicks and which signals it wants to amplify and then also dampen.
There you go with that expose of James O'Keefe. But coming up next is a Tucker Carlson just recently on the 25th of June of this year with Robert Epstein. And there's some other things that he's talking about also. But it's all about now. It looks like there's going to be some antitrust action or some curtailment of these three big companies in there because of their ability to sway and censor and so forth. But here we go with Tucker Carlson and Robert Epstein.
A new investigation has exposed Google's efforts to make sure the 2020 election goes the way it wants. You know which way that is. Google naturally is doing its best to suppress and hide the story and lie about it. That's just ahead as we continue live tonight from Tokyo, ahead of the president's visit to world leaders in Japan. After those meetings, we'll see him here on this program. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Tucker Carlson Tonight, live from Tokyo, Japan, ahead of the president's visit and our interview at the G20 summit in Osaka. Back in America, a tech story that might seem insignificant, but is not. In fact, it may determine what happens in the next presidential election, very well may. A Google whistleblower has come forward to describe his company's plans to remake the American political landscape. Google, of course, is the most powerful company in the world. So when an anonymous whistleblower comes forward, in this case telling Project Veritas that Google is using internal algorithms to shape what Americans see online, and by extension what they think, you better take it seriously.
Fairness is a dog whistle. It does not mean what you think that it means, and you have to apply doublethink in order to understand what they're really saying. And what they're really saying about fairness is that they have to manipulate their search results so that it gives them their political agenda that they want. And so they have to rebias their algorithms so that they can get their agenda across.
That's the definition of propaganda, again, being perpetuated by the single most powerful company in the history of the world. This is not surprising to viewers of this show. James Doran was fired for Google for his political views, his totally conventional, moderate political views. And then came on this show to describe the culture at Google. Watch this.
There are definitely some political biases within Google that I was trying to shed light on in the document and that they affect many parts of the business. And, for example, who they do business with and what type of content they create. And I really think that those political biases need to be addressed.
It's not just whistleblowers, though. Excuse me. Hidden camera footage obtained by Project Veritas shows a conversation with a woman called Jen Janai. Her Google title is Head of Responsive Innovations, Responsible Innovations in the Global Affairs Department. In that video, Janai says that Google is working specifically on products to make certain that Donald Trump does not win another election. Quote, "We're also training our algorithms, like if 2016 happened again, would the outcome be different?" People were not putting that line in the sand, that they were not saying that what's fair and what's equitable. So we're like, well, we're a big company. We're going to say it. In other words, we're going to try and affect the outcome of the 2020 presidential campaign. Janai goes on to blast Elizabeth Warren's proposal to break Google up into two companies. Why? Check out this reasoning. Quote, "All these smaller companies who don't have the same resources that we do will be charged with preventing the next Trump situation. It's like a small company cannot do that." Huh. So using a company's dominance on the Internet to sway the outcome of an election, that's their plan. There should be a term for what Janai is describing. Turns out there is a term. It's a term you've heard constantly from talking heads on television for more than 2 years. It's called hacking an election. Google wants to hack our election. They're saying that out loud. As we've been told over and over again by CNN and the Washington Post and the New York Times and all the other propagandists, hacking an election is very bad. At minimum, it warrants a multi-year investigation by law enforcement agencies. And yet, it's happening now. The Washington establishment has said they want to prevent election interference, but of course that's a lie. They just want to make sure they control the elections. That's their only goal. That's why they're not attacking the real source of election interference, which is Silicon Valley. Google, Facebook, and their ilk have far more political power than Russia ever has or ever will have. No serious person doubts that. But the people in charge of our country don't care about any of that, because when Google meddles in an election, Democrats benefit. By the way, if you want to find that video, you can't access it on YouTube. Google took it down. That's not surprising. You can already be tossed off of YouTube and Facebook if you decide they're using speech you don't like. They'll accuse you of hate speech, whatever that means. Now they can toss you off their sites just for putting up videos that make you look bad. They probably won't be banning any DNC video time, any videos anytime soon. You can be certain of that. Meanwhile, this week, Ravelry, a knitting social networking website with 8 million members, banned all explicit support for Donald Trump, and only for Donald Trump. And they got away with it. And because they have gotten away with it, other platforms almost certainly will do the same thing. All of this is going on fragrantly in public, but most Republicans haven't even responded to it. They haven't reacted at all. As soon as the 2016 election was over, the press and big tech openly began plotting on how to control the narrative in 2020, which is another way of saying control the election outcome in 2020, and using the scapegoat of fake news as an excuse to control the public discourse. Republicans were in charge of Congress at the time. They did nothing. The White House commands a vast regulatory apparatus. They've sat motionless and done nothing. The only Republican who seems even interested at all in the subject and keeping big tech in check at all is new Senator Josh Hawley. He just introduced a bill that would force tech companies to act as genuinely open platforms in order to receive valuable regulatory benefits. That's the deal. They're violating the deal. Nobody else seems to care. Passing Hawley's bill does not seem to be a conservative priority, though. No one in Congress is talking about it. That's a big mistake. Successful political parties look out for their supporters and for the public at large and protect them from harm. Republicans, meanwhile, are sitting in a stupefied fog of libertarianism, doing nothing while their ideas are suppressed and their supporters are silenced. One day they'll look up and find they have no supporters at all. Who will be to blame for that? Only themselves. Dr. Robert Epstein is not a Republican, but he is the preeminent researcher into this subject. He's a senior research psychologist at the American Behavioral Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. And he is, again, the world's great expert on the effect of the tech companies on political discourse. He joins us tonight. Dr. Epstein, thank you very much for coming on. Seeing
always a pleasure.
This videotape, reading the quotes from this Google executive, does this confirm what you've said in the past? Are you surprised by this? What's your response?
I'm not surprised in the least. It confirms in glowing terms, or in very ugly terms, if you want to look at it that way, that Google not only has the power to shift opinions and votes on a massive scale, but they exercise this power. And this is what I measure in my research. So I can tell you fairly precisely how many votes they can shift. I can tell you fairly precisely how many votes they shifted in 2018.
So why is that not hacking an election?
Well, it's not hacking an election right now because Google and similar companies like Facebook are completely unregulated in the United States. So they can do whatever they please. And if they all work together in 2020 to support the same presidential candidate, which is very likely, and probably it'll be a candidate that I support, by the way, they can shift upwards of 15 million votes with no one knowing that they've been manipulated and without leaving a paper trail for authorities to trace.
So that's it. There's no election at that point. Our democracy is not real if that's allowed to happen. Correct?
Well, democracy becomes an illusion. Now, there are actions one can take. I've set up so far the only two big monitoring systems that anyone has built to actually look over people's shoulder as they're doing election-related, online activities, and to aggregate that information and see what they are being shown by these big companies. Now, in 2020, I'm actually trying right now to raise funds to build a large-scale monitoring system to keep an eye on these companies and to catch them in the act, literally catch them, when they are manipulating votes and opinions. And in my opinion, that's the only way we can stop them. There are no laws in place that can stop them at the moment.
Calling attention to it might be the first step, and you've done more than anyone to do that. Dr. Epstein, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Now, Robert Epstein was saying in this latest interview with Tucker Carlson that he's designing an engine, and that engine will be able to real-time monitor and so forth. But we do need help. That engine, let me get back to that. Epstein says that the engine, the software engine, will be able to monitor some of these problems that we have with Google, Facebook, and Twitter in swaying and influencing the public about around election time or before, leading up to election time. So that's all important. But we need a call to action, and there's no one better to do that than Alex Jones. And here's Alex Jones speaking about what we need to do next.
On this Global Friday edition, I've got a big question for everybody. Yes, we love Trump. He's embattled. He's got a lot of great stuff done. The media lies about him constantly. So I tend to defend him, even when really he shouldn't be defended on some issues, like censorship. Let me give you a great example that's breaking right now at Infowars.com and Newswars.com. Senator Wyden, who's joined Senator Murphy, Blumenthal, and others, for calling me to be completely removed off the air, period, saying I'm a threat to American democracy, well, he came out and said the exact same thing about the Donald subreddit, the biggest subreddit on Reddit. Now, I was eradicated off Reddit years ago. And then once you're taken off there, people can sit there and lie about you all they want, make up whatever stories they want. People who try to defend me, they get banned too. They become these authoritarian echo chambers. Well, now you have the head of Reddit in an Ask Me Anything event with Senator Wyden on there. And the full text of this screenshots is in a Paul Joseph Watson article on Infowars.com demanding that it be completely removed. Well, Reddit simply froze the account, locked it down so no one could say anything. That's beyond shadow banning. I'm going to read some of the statements here in a moment, but think about this. All of these guys are on record. When I got banned in August of last year, 10 months ago, the first big ban, the big concerted cartel ban, they all came out and said, listen, this is good, but there's thousands of sites as bad or worse. That's a quote from Wyden. And all these other people, all of a sudden, all the other talk show hosts, all the other bloggers, almost all of them said, ooh, we better not come on Alex Jones' show anymore. Ooh, we better not have him on our shows anymore. Because if we do that, we'll get banned. No, when you act like that, you get banned later and there's no one to stand up for you. These are authoritarian tactics that have been used for thousands of years. There's playbooks literally on it. Communist playbooks on it, and we're falling right into the trap. When someone gets banned, I have them on. When someone gets lied about, I have them on. When somebody's getting boycotted, I buy advertising on their show, like I did with Limbaugh back when they were trying to take him down 7-8 years ago. We hang together or we hang separate. Who is the only major media outlet that's big that understands this other than InfoWars? It's Madrej. The more we get persecuted, the more he supported us. And everybody else, for that matter, that's being persecuted. Oh, who else? Tucker Carlson. And then you've got people like Steven Crowder, who said, yes, I'm directly having you on because of the latest Facebook ban 2 months ago. And that's what it takes, is it takes standing together and recognizing what's happening. I care about the censorship of all of us. I could care less about it happening only to me. I care about my children. I'm doing this because the globalists are tyrants and must be opposed. I'm not doing this because I want the biggest radio or TV show. So many people get into media to be popular. And then when the going gets tough, they become conservative light or patriot light or nationalist light. No, not me. When the going gets tough, I get 10 times more hardcore, because that historically is the only way to make it out of a tyranny like this. So think about it. Just yesterday, Twitter came out and said, oh, we're under a lot of pressure to censor conservatives by liberals, but we're not going to do that, which they've always been doing that. It's just gotten worse. We're going to shadow ban people lightly. So we're not going to put you in a concentration camp. We're just going to put you in a gulag, or we're going to put you in a ghetto right now. And then later, we'll starve you to death or blow your brains out. I mean, that's the equivalency of this, because they know they can't hide the shadow banning anymore. They know there's congressional investigations. And so now they're just going, well, yes, we're going to hide some of Trump's tweets, and we're going to put little informationals literally created by the Southern Poverty Law Center and Snopes beside them. It's incredible. I played a clip of the CIA director, or actually Eddie Bravo did on his podcast, and the former CIA director was talking about weather control, weather modification. When they pulled the YouTube up where he was admitting weather control, Brennan, they actually had a Wikipedia link, an encyclopedia link below it, saying there's no such thing as weather modification. It's a conspiracy theory. So he's at the CFR. He's saying it. But because the countervailing statement is, I'm wrong, none of this exists, even when they're admitting it to their own people, the system has an automated pop-up that puts that garbage out. So when I say Trump hasn't done enough on the censorship, he hasn't. It's just completely overwhelming. Because as I started out this transmission, this report, Trump knows Senator Wyden is doing this. He knows Senator Murphy is doing this. He knows they have hearings in Congress where they say, we want Paul Watson banned. We want Alex Jones banned. We want Steven Crowder banned. And no one is safe from this, ladies and gentlemen. This is oppression. This is authoritarianism. And we've already gone off the deep end. Now the left are censoring each other more and more. This is beyond a slippery slope. So here's the article. Dem senator pushed for censorship of the Donald before it was quarantined by Reddit. Ron Wyden told Reddit CEO Forum was inciting hatred on June 5th. Democrat Senator Ron Wyden pushed for the censorship of Donald's subreddit just weeks before it was quarantined by Reddit. As we reported on Wednesday, Reddit quarantined the forum, which is often a precursor to the total ban. So do you get the picture, President Trump? Twitter is already shadow banning your tweets and already not letting most people see them and pushing them down. That's been going on for 2 years. Now they're going to put comments on the side of your tweets or shadow ban them, and they're announcing it to see what you'll do. There's been calls in the media to totally ban you off Twitter. And now the Donald subreddit, where they know most of the powerful memes come from, is being blocked. Ahead of being totally banned the week you relaunch your presidential campaign 2020. And who's demanding it? The Democratic Party senators who sit on top the network that Obama set up in the Defense Department before he left in 2017. In December of 2016, he signed the executive orders creating the Countering Foreign Disinformation and Propaganda Act. And you notice what Google did, their head of censorship, when she got caught this week in Project Veritas report. She put out a report saying, oh, we just meant that we shadow ban and block foreign interference that would get Trump reelected. That's the cover they use when a senator calls up Reddit or sends them messages publicly saying, we want you to take down Donald Trump's biggest support website. This is insane. President Trump, this is not free market. This isn't companies having their own policies. This is the Democratic Party threatening regulation and sanctions on big tech if they don't censor the American people and meddle in the 2020 election. And you, with Brad Parscales and all those other people, obviously know what's going on. So again, I care about you, President Trump. I admire you, and I've gone through hell supporting you, and I want to beat these people. Because if they get in power, I'm probably going to have to leave the country. They're already trying to put me in prison and your family in prison. So don't be so confident that you think it's your rallies and you that's totally winning this. What amplifies your voice to defeat the globalists is us. And so when they shut us up, they're shutting you up. We need relief. We need defense. We need support right now, President Trump, right now. It's illegal, it's election meddling, and they're doing it in front of God and country at high noon, pissing in our faces. Defend us. Defend yourself. Defend your family. Stand up to these criminals. Take their Section 230. Start criminal investigations. There was no damn Russian meddling. They're the ones that are meddling. Back to the live feed, but I'm getting really angry. And it's time for President Trump to take action, but it's time for American people to take action. It's unbelievable. They are probing and they are testing. And it's time for us to stop sitting here and taking it. I'm Alex Jones, Infowars.com, Newswars.com, defending the Republic from enemies foreign and domestic and never backing down. And we need that same thing now from the president. We don't need talk about lawsuits and talk about antitrust. We need action.
This next clip is what Jimmy Carter had to say about the election of President Trump, and it's off the wall, but here we go with Jimmy Carter.
One more off the top of the news, and then we'll dive in. Russia has been proven, or by our intelligence community, to have interfered with one of our human rights, which is the right of free and fair elections. Yes. What's your reaction? How should we deal with Russia?
Well, the president himself should condemn it, admit that it happened, which I think 16 of intelligence agencies have already agreed to say. And there's no doubt that the Russians did interfere in the election. And I think the interference, although not yet quantified, if fully investigated, would show that Trump didn't actually win the election in 2016. He lost the election, and he was put into office because the Russians interfered on his behalf.
So do you believe President Trump is an illegitimate president?
Based on what I just said, which I can't retract. Okay.
Thank you.
Next is a short clip of some of his President Trump's response to some of the reporters at the press conference after the G20. So here we go with that.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'm Zhang Qi with China's Taixin Media Business News Organization in China. Just a little bit follow-up on Huawei. You said you're going to discuss Huawei's entity listing soon. Would you say it's a possibility that Huawei is going to be removed from the list?
Is it going to what?
Removed from the entity list.
I don't want to talk about it now. I mean, we're looking at that very carefully. Huawei is very much in play in terms of our country and in terms of intelligence and the intelligence community. We know a lot about Huawei, but I don't want to mention that right now. I just think it's inappropriate. I will say that we're not making it, other than what I told you already, we're not making it a big subject. We're going to save that for later.
Okay. And okay. Another question on the big picture of U.S.-China relations. What do you think U.S. and China should see each other? Are we strategic partners? Are we competitors? Are we enemies? What are we?
No, I think we're going to be
strategic
partners. I think we can help each other. I think in the end we can have, if the right deal is structured, we can be great for each other. If China would open up, you're opening up a tremendous, you know, the largest market in the world. And right now China's not open to the United States, but we're open to China. That should have never really been allowed to happen. Okay. Yes, please. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. President. On Russia, are you planning to go to Moscow next spring, as President Putin invited you? And
yes.
Do you agree with him that Western-style liberalism, as it's been defined over the post-war period, is now obsolete and no longer relevant to today's world?
Well, I haven't heard him say that, but he did invite me to Russia for the defeat of Nazis. That's a big thing, defeat of Nazis. You know, Russia lost, he said, 25 million people. I had actually heard 50 million people, but he said yesterday that Russia fighting the Nazis, they lost 25 million people. You would know better than anybody, Peter. But it was a tremendous, you know, they suffered greatly. And they're having a 75th, you could really say, celebration of the defeat of the Nazis. And he invited me, and I said I would give it very serious consideration. That was Russia went through a lot. They lost, I guess, far more than anybody fighting the Nazis in terms of people. And he did invite me, and I said we would get back. But we will give that very serious consideration.
His comments to the Financial Times right before arriving here was that Western-style liberalism is obsolete. I know you probably haven't read the interview.
Well, again, he may feel that way. I mean, he sees what's going on, and I guess if you look at what's happening in Los Angeles, where it's so sad to look, and what's happening in San Francisco and a couple of other cities, which are run by an extraordinary group of liberal people. I don't know what they're thinking, but he does see things that are happening in the United States that would probably preclude him from saying how wonderful it is. At the same time, he congratulated me, as every other leader of every country did, for what we've done economically, because we probably have the strongest economy we've ever had, and that's a real positive. But I'm very embarrassed by what I see in some of our cities, where the politicians are either afraid to do something about it, or they think it's votes, or I don't know what. Peter, I don't know what they're thinking, but when you look at Los Angeles, when you look at San Francisco, when you look at some of the other cities, and not a lot, but you don't want it to spread. And at a certain point, I think the federal government maybe has to get involved. We can't let that continue to happen to our cities.
That pretty well concludes our first hour this evening. And there's just a lot going on out there. It's just quite a bit that it's hard to cover it all. But, you know, what we're trying to do and sort of, you know, tie up some of the loose ends. We've got so much going on in this world today. And this trip to China, to Japan, I should say, to the G20, I don't know what it resulted in. I think he got names on Yahweh, the big company that could cause us many national security problems. He struck some kind of a deal with them. And then he's beginning talks with China again, trade talks. He made some overtures to other people. The Crown Prince, he sort of accepted what the Crown Prince was saying about the murder in Turkey and so forth. So I can't say that there was great, you know, progress made. He seemed to get along with everybody. It's not in this clip, but his response to what Jimmy Carter said about him being illegitimate president, he said, well, President Jimmy Carter wasn't a very good president. And that's what Trump is good at. He'll hit back. He won't take it sitting down. And I guess you got to respect the man for doing that. Otherwise, the big story this week had to be the expose of Google by Veritas, by James O'Keefe. And that's big. And then also added to that is Robert Epstein's, work in the search engine manipulation effect area. And we've got to, and then the call to action by Alex Jones. He'll stand up and tell you where he's at, so I respect that. But we've got to do something about these big search engines. They're biasing the elections, and it looks like they were on Hillary's side. And so they've actually created, on this midterm, they probably put the House into Democratic hands. That's sort of what I see. I want to thank you for listening, and good night, and God bless each and every one of you. So good night. Thank you.